If you were at the AMCIS annual conference last May, you'll remember Joe Beckett from Joe Beckett Coaching and Development giving a talk on managing boundaries to work sustainably and enhance impact. It went down so well at the conference that she's back, and today you're about to hear from her on this podcast. We talk about ways to work better in school marketing and admissions, but also how to live better when considering things like limiting thoughts, working with others in your team, and working alongside SLT. I think you're going to like this. Come with me now.
Welcome back to the AMCIS podcast, brought to you by the Bonjour Agency. AMCIS is the Association for Admissions, Marketing and Communications in Independent Schools. And this is the podcast where we speak to people in the independent school sector. Let's get into this episode right now.
Joe, thank you for joining us on this episode of the podcast. How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're here back with the AMCIS audience. Of course, you were at the AMCIS annual conference earlier this year in May. Can I just ask actually how you found that conference, what it was like for you to be there as an external speaker, as opposed to someone who works directly in a school?
I loved my experience of the conference in May. It was actually the first AMCIS conference I'd been to, and I've worked in the sector for about 16 years. And I'm former CEO of IDP, which is a very similar membership association, but for directors of development and external relations. So I was really thrilled to join the conference in May, but I had been given a session at 4 p.m. in the afternoon on the Monday, and I was thinking, oh, how am I going to keep people awake? But what really struck me was the energy of the audience. They were so engaged. They were so upbeat. And it was an absolute pleasure to work with them in the session. It was great.
Well, that's great to hear that from the AMCIS members. I imagine that part of that came from the energy at the front of the room, the person who was on stage speaking to them as well, the person who we're hearing from right now, which is yourself. Joe, just for the sake of people who are listening, you mentioned about IDP. You've mentioned as well that you've worked alongside the independent school sector for, I think you said, 16 years. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing so that people understand a bit about where you've been and what you're doing now as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'll start with now. And currently, I run my own business, Joe Beckett Coaching and Development. And I'm a qualified executive coach. I'm a psychologist and I'm a certified resilience teacher. I work with individuals on a one-to-one basis, but also I work with teams. So development teams, senior leadership teams, finance teams. And it's really about helping individuals to feel their best and really move beyond their current frame of reference so that they can move into that stretch zone and really do their best. So I sometimes describe it as enabling an individual or team to realize their value or optimize their potential. It sounds a bit cliched, but you and I know that if we don't feel great or we've got some limiting thoughts about something, you know, perhaps a challenge or a goal that's important to us, that's going to inhibit us. And so there's a lot around how can I think about this in a different way so that I can stretch and do more. I got into the work because I was in senior leadership for over 30 years, initially in the commercial radio sector and commercial television sector. So there was a lot of pressure. It was about growth. It was about targets. And then I segued into senior leadership in the school sector. And what I found going into leadership without any formal training, I found myself sitting around the boardroom table, wondering whether I really belonged there, whether I deserved a seat at the table. And so when I was introduced to my first executive coach, I found the effect was transformational in terms of how I thought about myself and how I was able to approach the challenges and the goals within the organisation. So I do what I do now because of the transformational impact it had on me as a leader and what I was able to achieve, turning around organisations, restructuring business models, when it all felt too hard. So that's why I do what I do, but I also bring a wealth of experience in media around diversifying income, growing income, turning around businesses. So I've got that sharp edge, which is very relevant to AMCIS members.
I love that combination of the sharp edge, as you call it, but then also the, if I can call it, the softer side of developing the skills within people. And I don't mean soft in a negative way at all. In fact, quite the opposite. Now, you mentioned a couple of things I'd love to pick up on. One of them was stretch zone. The other one was limiting thoughts. Can we just talk about stretch zone for a second? What sort of things do you mean by that?
That stretch zone looks different for different people. But what I can tell you is, so we have a comfort zone. that's that familiar place, you know, that familiar place we've worked for 10 years. We know what's happening in the morning when we arrive. We know how to handle the bursar now because we've worked with him for like 5 years. And, you know, and we're just comfortable. And scientists have estimated that when we operate 4% beyond our comfort zone or current competencies, we feel most fulfilled, most on point, most motivated.
Ooh.
And so what that means is when we're operating too much of the time in our comfort zone, there is a risk of feeling bored. There is a risk of feeling complacent. There is a risk of losing motivation. But then you've got a bigger circle. If you imagine your circle of comfort zone in the middle, and then your stretch zone is 4% beyond that, and then you've got a bigger circle, an outer circle around that. Let's imagine you just started a new job. It's your first promotion to director level or headship. You're in a completely different school. It's a much bigger school, bigger scales. You're also doing a qualification at the same time, and you've moved house. And suddenly, you're in a new house, you're in a new work environment, you don't really know what you're doing, you don't know the people. And suddenly you've gone way beyond your stretch zone and you're in...
panic zone?
Panic zone, you got it. And when we're in our panic zone, and this relates to this environment that we're working in right now, this sort of volatile, uncertain environment, when we're in that place, we're human after all. We go into fight, flight, freeze. So our stress hormones are elevated. And when our stress hormones are elevated, it shuts off that part of the brain, that prefrontal cortex, where our higher level critical thinking happens, our rational thinking. And so what I see happening since COVID is a change in the way people are showing up because their physiology has changed because of the environment around us. We're no longer in our comfort zone. We don't know what the next year is going to bring. And so what that means is that there's an elevated way of feeling and being. And what I'm seeing in schools is a lot more people issues, a lot more tensions in teams, a lot more tantrums, a lot more time dealing with people issues because people are less regulated. Their emotional temperature is heightened.
Okay, so someone then who is listening to this right now, let's imagine they work in marketing or admissions or marketing and admissions, and maybe they're feeling like actually because of everything that's going on in the independent school sector right now, the pressure that they're feeling to deliver pupil numbers into the school is actually taking them beyond their stretch zone into that panic zone. And that from one day to the next, actually they're feeling like they're being spread way too thin on lots of different things, that they're at the beck and call of the head of the bursar, of the maybe the marketing director, if they're not a marketing director themselves, various other people, and at the same time trying to respond to parent emails or phone calls or just general questions through whatever social media channel or whatever. They're having to wear many, many different hats, and actually they're going home at the end of every day really quite exhausted. What's one of the first things that they could be doing in that situation, if we can try to empathize with them for a moment?
I think the first place to go to respond to your question is, what impact is that likely to be having? And I see the impact it's having through my clients who, you know, if we're having one-to-one coaching, it's a space for them to show up and be honest about what's really happening. And I see a sense of overwhelm. I see people close to burnout. I see people with fragmented focus. They can't see the wood for the trees. I see people who don't really realize what a great job they're doing because they feel like they failed every day because they haven't got done everything they need to get done. And so I think the first thing to say is that in this environment where we've got multiple stakeholders, multiple demands, lots of pressure, it's about how can we protect our headspace? Because this plus, you know, we live in a highly digitalized age. We've got zettabytes of information coming at us every day, not just at work, but when we get home. And our brains weren't built to process that. So there's something around headspace and energy. If you think about your iPhone or your computer, you have to plug it in, you have to reboot it. And because we're putting so much pressure on our brain, we need to think about that in terms of our own thinking space, our headspace. And often when I'm coaching people or facilitating forums, people say about the importance of things that bring them into the present moment. Often we're not in the present moment. We're not able to deal with that individual in front of us because we're thinking about what we need to do next. So what can we do to protect our headspace? There's often a sense of things happening to us and at us. And so it's bringing back, okay, what do I have control over? And the first thing I will say is when you wake up in the morning, set your intentions for the day. Our brain, when we wake up in the morning from sleep, our brain is highly malleable. It's highly open to suggestions. And so take a moment. Sometimes you might wake up worrying about work. Write it down. Get it out of your mind. Reduce its magnification. Write it down. What are you worried about? And then ask yourself a question. Well, how do I want to experience today? How do I need to show up today? So I did the same thing this morning for this conversation. How do I want to feel? How do I want to show up? I want to feel calm. I want to feel prepared. And I want to be in my element because I'm talking about things I love and I'm passionate about. And I remember that because I did it in the first half an hour, and it stays with you all day. And my clients, some have been skeptical about the impact of it, but they've said it's been transformational to the way that they experience their day, how they respond. So you're telling your brain, this is how I want to feel. This is how I want to experience today. And as you practice this, you might want to give yourself some reminders, perhaps in your phone, lunchtime it comes up, or you might write some post-its with the words. But it just reminds you to focus on what feels important for you for the day.
Some people talk about the importance of priming first thing in the morning, setting yourself up for the day. And I think what you're talking about here is the idea of visualizing something and seeing it as done, that thing that you're looking at for today, you know, imagining that today is finished and you've lived that day in a really positive way and you've finished all of these tasks that you've got, that feeling of achievement, that sense of achievement. But to feel that at the start of the day or the start of the month or the start of the year, whatever it is, and then to see it as done before you've done it. Is that the kind of thing that you mean?
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, what you think, if you're worrying about something, then your brain goes, oh, what's the matter? And it starts to sort of trigger the stress hormones. But if you think about yourself feeling calm, you know, and perhaps a time when you were feeling calm or something that enables you to feel calm, you know, walking by the sea or walking in nature or whatever it is, you're thinking it. So you start, the feeling follows that. And our behaviour is shaped by what we think and we feel. So it's so important in terms of managing our thoughts. And that brings me to the end of the day practice. Because when we're under pressure and when we're feeling stressed, we tend to look for what else is coming at me? What else is coming around the corner? Oh my God, I just dropped a ball. What else is going to go wrong? And so it's so important to help our brains to remember to focus on the good. So positive psychology is such an important practice when it comes to resilient leadership and performance. So at the end of the day, maybe it's the end of the workday, maybe it's before you go to bed. If you can write it down, it has more impact. But, you know, what were the three things that made me smile today? What do I feel proud about achieving today? One thing I feel proud about achieving. And so it's helping your brain rather than erring on the negative and looking at, I didn't do that. I could have said that. I wish I'd done that. You're saying, actually, let's have a look at what I did do, because that is not going to drain my energy and it's not going to fuel my rumination and take up my headspace. It's going to give me a feeling of, God, I feel really proud that I did that. And it's going to give you a good feeling, which then impacts your thoughts and how you show up.
You mentioned as well the idea of limiting thoughts, you called it. Is this the idea that you tell yourself something negative, like, you know, I'm not the kind of person who does X, or I'm not the kind of person who stands on stage and gives a talk. I'm not the kind of person to do whatever it is, maybe that thing that's outside of our comfort zone. And therefore, because we're telling ourselves these things, we kind of seek to fulfill that by not doing it ever. Is that the kind of thing that you mean?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, you can call them various different things, but there's limiting beliefs. There is a sort of an inner critical voice, but they're all ways of thinking. They're stories we tell ourselves, and they are just stories. And often they come from a bad experience or they come from a young place where we've learned, you know, our parents have told us something and we've carried it with us. And I work with individuals who, even though they are very successful, very capable, and clearly, you know, achieving an awful lot in their careers, they still carry these limiting beliefs. I don't deserve a pay rise. You know, I can't reach this target. I'm no good at, you know, doing this. And so my role as their coach is to unpick what the reality is, because often we need to look at what the reality is now and what you are doing, and to reframe how you see yourself and to update your narrative and your story about yourself and who you are. I was doing this with a client last week, and she saw herself at the beginning of her career, and she wasn't. She was 10 years in. She was an expert. She's got various qualifications, and she changed it from, you know, I'm at the beginning of my career, to I'm an experienced deputy head. And just hearing that gives you the gravitas, doesn't it? Your story, your words to yourself. I'm an experienced, you know, I do the same thing myself. I'm an experienced leadership coach.
We tell ourselves so many stories, don't we? And then those stories become our lives, you know, just because that may have been our story in the past doesn't mean that that has to be our story in the future.
Absolutely. And there we come into the sort of the real value of coaching, which is about possibilities and opportunities. And I love this side of coaching. I love working with teams, because so often we get stuck in, well, we tried that before. Well, we don't want to try that, you know, and there's a lot of negative, conservative thinking in schools. And what's really exciting about this new era that we find ourselves in is that there's now definitely opportunity to innovate, to do things differently, to be bold, to be more radical. And so a lot of my work with teams is taking them out of their comfortable way of thinking and relating, so they can have constructive challenge within their conversations. They can think, imagine you couldn't fail. Imagine you had the Midas touch and everything you did around this project or this goal was 100% successful. What would you do? What would you try? And it's so amazing to see, you know, the ideas and the energy that comes from the team I'm working with when they give themselves permission to think beyond the limit.
So some of the people listening to this right now, maybe they want to embrace more of the bold approaches in their marketing in their schools. But maybe if they're not on the SLT, maybe there's a clash there of what the SLT is prepared to do. Maybe the school is quite an old school and the SLT doesn't want to do anything too dramatically different to how they've done things in the past, or any different really from what other schools might be doing in the local area, or if they're a boarding school, their general competition. What words of advice would you have for someone who's in that position where they're not part of the SLT, but they want to take that approach to the SLT and they want to be heard within SLT as well?
I'm going to share three C's with you, and I'll explain what, why and what they mean. But the first is contracting. The second is collaboration. And the third is checking in. So what I see happening a lot is a lack of contracting in terms of, well, we want to achieve this, or we want to get, you know, 40 new pupils. You know, what does good look like for you, the head, the bursar? What does good look like for you, the director of marketing? What does great look like? So if we were to think about a year hence and everything had gone really, really well in the marketing admissions department, what would be happening that isn't now? What would be different? What would the numbers look like? So let's just agree, let's just check we're all on the same page, because so often people have different expectations in their heads and we have to verbalise them, we have to crystallise them to get that alignment. And when you've agreed what good looks like or what great looks like, it's like, okay, so how are we going to get there? And it is, how are we going to get there? And what do you need from me? So as the head, so I facilitate critical relationship conversations between the head, the bursar, the director of development, director of external relations, to really tease out, where are we going? What are the critical priorities? How do you see, you know, what are the five steps to getting there? What do you see they are? What am I missing? So you're really getting that alignment. And then what do you need from me? Because the head might have certain expectations in terms of how you're reporting, how you're communicating, and your thoughts around communication and updates could be completely different. So what do you need from me? If we've agreed the goals, we know where we're heading, I will develop a strategy, but what do you need from me between here and the goal? And this is what I need from you. So if you want me to achieve 40 new pupils, then I need to meet with you once a week. I need access to you. And I need us to discuss the barriers or whatever it is you need. So it's about having a courageous conversation, but also getting that clarity around what does good look like? What do you need? What do I need? How are we going to get there? And also, what resource is missing? You know, okay, so if we can't have the resource, then maybe this 40 pupils is unrealistic. So what would be realistic? And it's about that collaborative coaching style conversation, because otherwise you're more likely to fail and fall over because either your communication breaks down because you're not getting what you want when you have those meetings, or you start being questioned because they're not sure you're doing what they think you should be doing. And so there's just a minefield of, you know, holes to fall down. And that contracting conversation is the beginning. The collaboration is around honest communication, and I suppose relates to the check-in as well, in that you're going to be saying, this is what's going well, this is what we've achieved since our last meeting, but these things are getting in the way. So how are we going to minimize and mitigate these things that are getting in the way? Maybe it's to do with resource. Maybe it is, you know, the team's too small. Maybe it is that the SLT aren't giving you what you need. But you have to share the problem. And when you share the problem, then the other person can't help but get engaged. If I share a problem with you, you know, I said to you earlier, gosh, I find it really hard to explain succinctly what I do because it's so intangible, but it does relate to performance. And I said, how would you do it, didn't I? And immediately you sort of came back. So when you engage someone with the problem, then you can collaborate together. And the checking in is about being honest. What is going well? What isn't going well? What needs to happen for you to move the project or the initiative forwards?
One of the things you mentioned a couple of minutes ago was about being courageous. And if I can take us back to earlier in this podcast episode, you mentioned very briefly, you said the word physiology. How important do you think physiology is in being courageous in the first place?
I believe personally that physiology is at the root, at the heart of emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence covers, as you know, a number of aspects of self and other, but it's about knowing yourself sufficiently well that you're able to regulate your emotional temperature. Because I've already talked about what happens when the stress hormones are reeling around our body, our prefrontal cortex, higher level thinking shuts down. So if someone is upset, if we're dealing with a difficult parent or we're dealing with a difficult member of staff and we are in a heightened state, we're more likely to defend, attack, or just shut down. So our physiology, you know, how am I feeling today? How calm, how grounded do I feel? And then having strategies, and these are very personalised, you know, what works for you. You know, a head I coach, running and exercise is absolutely critical. She has to build that into her week. Otherwise, she just unravels. And for someone else, it'll be meditation or it'll be enough sleep or whatever. But there are certain things, and it's about developing that self-awareness. So you know yourself sufficiently well to know, I'm feeling stressed. I'm not thinking as clearly as I'd like to be thinking. I know I need to reboot. What am I going to do to reboot? And if you go into a difficult or uncomfortable situation or conversation feeling heightened, then it's likely to exacerbate the heightened emotion in the conversation or in the room. And it you know, it's less likely to be a resolution or a good outcome.
Wow. Joe, it's really interesting hearing this. I'm keeping an eye on time only because actually I'd love to sit here and talk to you for hours about this. I think it's a fascinating subject. I really do. If anyone is listening to this and if they felt the same way as me and wanted to connect with you online or in person, how could they do that?
I've actually got a handout, a resource that I developed for the session for AMKIS, and there's more detail about some of the techniques I've talked about. So if you'd like to get a copy of that, either contact AMKIS, and I'm sure they'll put you in touch with me, or if you've got a pen and paper, my email address is joe@joebeckett, and that's B-E-C-K-E-T-T, development.com. So joe@joebeckettdevelopment.com. I'd love to hear from you, and hopefully I'll see you at an AMKIS event soon.
Well, we'll put a link to your email address in the show notes for this podcast episode. But in the meantime, Joe Beckett, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Thank you, Simon. It's been a pleasure.